I would just like to point out two things. One is that I am disappointed with disingenuous statement. I am pretty sure that nobody from the Department of Surgery consultants who wrote a letter and all signed their names to this letter was invited to the simulation. So for him to imply that all departments were represented is absolutely not true. Hmm?
Secondly, I made it clear.
Let you finish.
Person that was there.
Yeah. And to say that again, the head of the department did not express to you, because it was done so in front of me, in the same room, that facility was unacceptable.
Look,
I was the bottom. He has expressed that to you.
The bottom line.
That's the fact.
The bottom line of this, though, is there's the promise. And this is important because at the end of the day, any one of us could end up in a situation where we need that specialist medical attention. And I think in light of the fact that there is a difficulty in trying to find that common ground, then it becomes necessary for us to hear exactly what is going to be done to try to see if you can find a compromised situation here, which at the end of the day is to the advantage of patients in the country. It is unfortunate that this has not been achieved so far, and I sincerely hope that by discussing it here, it will prompt all parties to try to see to what extent we can find some common ground on these issues, so that at the end of the day, the Barbadian public is not left with a situation where I don't ever want to be in a position where something major happens down the road, and then somebody legitimately asks us as media people, and what did you do? You know? Because somebody's telling me they're surprised to hear that we're discussing this here. But there's a reason why we discuss it here, because we consider it important to the country as a whole. And there is always that possibility that by failing to do what is necessary, we will end up with a situation where we will be asked, so you knew that something was out there and did nothing about it. I prefer to go in this direction. Thank you both, gentlemen. This is Down to Brass Tacks. Welcome to Down to Brass Tacks. Hello. Now it's 1:28.
How are you?
Yes, I'm okay.
That's good, my brother. Now, I got a lot on my chest today because I was doing a lot of homework with a lot of people. Now, David, I want to ask you a very big favor, and I don't know if it can be granted. The favor is that yesterday was out and about looking at a lot of problems that people got. And one of the concerns that they had is that there was like a day where people who will be first-time callers could call in just for them because they say that they can't get to. I talked about nearly 60 people yesterday, at safe distance, of course. Now, David, you listening to me carefully now?
I'm listening. I'm trying
Good.
To find out where you're going.
Good. Now, my next problem is this. Since this thing with the ZR drivers, with the percentage, Saturday, they had about six of them that took me an hour and a half to get from Oystein to Bridgetown. The men just play the fool. They're driving at 30, so when things get back to normal, the police will report them when they're doing 35 and 40. Now, the other problem is this. I was talking with a lady yesterday who happened to be paying tax for some land that she got agriculture in. We got a problem around here, David, with cuts. But you know, we got another problem with cocks crowing all during the day, all afternoon, early morning. You don't know when. One time a cock will crow, it used to be 5:30. Not now, all through it. But number one, doing that with the cocks. She says that they're then doing that with the monkeys. When the land tax bill come out, they should get the monkeys the bills to pay. Because nobody is doing nothing with the monkeys, and she won't get through the program because the monkeys destroy everything she got, and she can't get nothing else to pay the land tax. That is two. Now, this $1.5 million that Sandy Lane gave, I too got a problem with that. But you missed the ball today with that lady from the tourist that were in the hotel sector. After the 15th of April is normally good for the 4-day or 3-day week. I leave that for you not to say anything. The fourth one, education. I heard they not listen to you for 30 or 60, but I captured this one in 7:30, where a gentleman from the small contractors is saying that he hold the people from the Ministry of Education, go and look at the schools and start repairs now. But I agree with him in a way and disagree in another. My disagreement is that schooling is start back to January, so if you do the repairs now, you're going to keep treating the schools till January. The next one, though, is I would like to know if the ministers, along with the Prime Minister, if their allowances will be cut since they are going away and they are traveling. Mr. David Ellis, do you have anything to say?
Not a thing.
Well, you have a pleasant, a blessed, and a wonderful day, my brother.
All right, thank you. Down to Brass Tacks, hello. Welcome to the program, hello.
Yeah, good afternoon, Mr. Ellis.
Yes, sir.
When you talk about journalism, and you talk about some person, you got to go to not the top of the class. Today's discussion coming out of that situation with the gentleman who called in relation to the clinic, you have moved it to another position of showing you that there are some unhappiness and some discrepancies with the medical system in Barbados. I want to ask a question, but unfortunately, I want to know if instructions were given that all or most of the operating theatres will be closed, only emergency operations because of this COVID, which means the ophthalmologist department and the various departments, the oncology department, that based on the instructions coming, it seems as if Mr. Walters' side of the thing that they'll receive instructions and they operate with the instructions. That no.
But I don't think you're mixing up things. I don't know that that has anything to do with what Mr. Walters was talking about.
I'm not mixing up things. What I'm saying is that the question I would have asked, and I'm asking you if you get an opportunity, where it is that most of the operating theatres were closed and referred to later dates on the calendar?
Well, you know, they said that the Director of Medical Services is actually going to make himself available to come to the program to answer some of those questions. So we will await that particular program and put some of those questions to them so that we get a better sense of how the system is working. You know, out of all of this, we are going to have some strengths and we are going to have some weaknesses. As you go along, you're going to find that you're going to have to tweak things, put certain things in place for the future. You know, all of this is what it's all about. Now, part of this is some people, because of the gravity of the situation, will say, you know, there are certain things they don't want to hear. And then there are other people, because you got different camps here dealing with it. There are other people who say, look, we need to hear that. This is important to our livelihood.
Now, based on what I've heard from you today, it seemed to be a misunderstanding between the members of the board or members of the board and the general surgeons. So you need to have that clarified in order that the public will not be blaming any particular source, because what I've heard today is a complete misunderstanding between the board, because there was a deputy chairman who was speaking and there was a person representing the surgeons, general surgeons. As some person who fully aware of what is going on and whose appointment has been placed all the way down the way, I am of the opinion that, yes, instructions are instructions, but if the operating theatres were closed because of COVID, and it meant that no operations could go on because of COVID unless it was an emergency, then I understand that. But because of certain things not put in place, then you and I would understand that this is why this was done. So I appreciate what you've done today, and I hope that somewhere along the line there will be a continuation of this discussion for the benefit
of
the
patient. Only thing I feel that we need to be a bit more open about the way that we actually have structured things. And a simple thing such as the fact that we have had so many recoveries, I think it's quite a number of them, but explaining to Barbadians how we have been able to do that, that's a plus. That's something to share with the public, to discuss how how we've done it. And then on top of all of that, you've put a lot of focus on COVID, but it's put us in a situation where some other things might have been affected. What are those areas, and how do we set about trying to address them? Because what you heard from that first caller, I think it was the first caller today, was actually addressing that kind of concern. All right? But, you know, in this business, you have the people who will say yay and people who will say nay, and you've got to do the best that you think you can in the circumstances. The most critical issue here is that there needs to be balance in dealing with it. You hear both sides of the story, and then you can determine for yourself, which one you are going to go with, if you think there's validity on one side or the other, but most of all, to push everybody to a point of trying to find a solution to the problem. Thank you very much. Down to brass tacks. Welcome to the program. It's now 1:39.
Good afternoon, David.
Yes, sir. How are you?
I'm pretty good. What about you?
I'm okay.
Good. Now, David, you know, I sat here and listened to the discussion with Professor Waldron and the deputy chair of the Greenleaf Hospital. Now, this reminds me of a situation in the past that we had where these same surgeons were at. I don't even want to use the word war. Where in truth and fact, they were sort of like trying to get the private clients, or patients, I should say, into their practice. I was sort of ignoring the same patients at the Queen Elizabeth Hospital. And that, this conversation just now,
How would this actually end up creating that kind of climate where you're pushing public patients to private care?
No, I say it reminds me of that.
How so? How so?
I mean, with the crosstalk that we had just now with both parties. You can remember we had something quite similar during that period of time. But I want to say this. Now, with the pandemic, David, I mean, it was an urgent situation where you had to set up these locations in order to facilitate the people who may come down with COVID. And I don't think the authorities had the time at that particular time to think or even incorporate operation theaters in those facilities. You know, it was sort of urgent. And I believe over time, if push come to shove, you indeed will see the same facilities that Professor Waldron pushing for.
That's not Professor Waldron. That's Dr. Waldron. That's Professor Waldron. That's not Professor Waldron.
I thought that was Professor Waldron.
No, that's not him.
I thought that was him.
But anyway, that's his son, but that's not him.
Oh, okay. So I believe eventually we'll see the same sort of facilities that he's asking for. But what I'm really concerned about is the conflict that has now been created. I mean, there's something that I don't think should be in the public domain. As the chair said, the deputy chair said, some of the surgeons, in fact, he said all of them, they was represented. You remember he told you that?
Well, I tell you that I'm privy to information that clearly indicates that quite a number of them have expressed concern. There's about 11 of them that I saw in writing.
But then he told you that they was all represented, you know, so it means that you still have a clique in between there, as you know, mentioned, that who are not in agreement with...
You know what's the fundamental issue here? The fundamental issue is trying to take into consideration all the concerns. On the one hand, the concern that you want to keep the Queen Elizabeth Hospital as free from COVID as possible, while at the same time trying to make sure that patient care is at its best, and that you don't necessarily, because a person has COVID, you want to make sure that they get the best possible care. So what you have here is a group of the doctors who have said basically they don't think that what has been done is the best, and they came up with an alternative. What has happened after that is that there has been basically another group of people who say, well, this is the best policy that we believe should be pursued, while the other set of doctors say, well, you know, basically we don't think it's the right thing, because at the end of the day, they say, well, they're the ones who have to do that kind of work. You know, nobody else is doing surgery. They're doing this. They're doing surgery. It's the general surgeons, you know.
I agree with you saying, but there's some surgeons who also willing to operate in the facility environment.
Well, the question is how many of them? I don't know.
Right, so sure, is a serious division.
I don't know how many of the people that you've seen, the other surgeons who say is acceptable.
Well, listen, I could only go by what the chair said. You could only go by what Wall John told you.
I could go by what I've seen. I can go by what I've seen.
But probably there's the one, the 11 that you mentioned, but the others, as he said.
What are the others?
There's more than 11 surgeons, David.
But who are these others? I don't know. But then, in any case, we need to get it resolved.
And if
at the end of the day they're going to be retrofitting the or modifying the facility at Emmore, then it has to take into consideration the concerns which have been raised by those other surgeons. You know, we've spent a lot of money already on these facilities, the one at St. Lucie and this one. So, you know, it is what it is. We got to work with it, okay?
Okay, thank you, David.
Thanks. Down to brass tacks.
Hello.
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Hi.
Hi. Good afternoon. If you could just permit me to make a couple of comments.
Sure.
I listened very carefully to the conversation there with Dr. Walren and the administrator from the QEH. And what I heard was a surgeon advocating passionately for patient care. And I thought it was quite unfortunate, you know, some of these messages, I guess, you received about, you know, surgeons wanting to be more elite than other people. I at no point did I hear him asking for a surgeon's lounge in the new facility. What I heard was for him asking that even though we have COVID-19, that the surgical standards in Barbados reach that bare minimum. At the end of the day, you know, it would be foolhardy to, you know, do all of these things to save lives from COVID and then having patients dying from preventable diseases like surgical site infections. Right? And, you know, one other thing I want to mention was that, you know, saying that you're going to keep the QEH COVID-free is a little bit naive, you know, especially this might be the first wave we've done very well when we open up the flights again and we start to have higher levels of, you know, people, infections coming with tourists, etc. You know, and we're not testing everyone coming into the QEH. The QEH needs to be fitted so that every patient who comes in and needs emergency surgery can get it, whether we know that they're COVID-19 positive or not. This is what is usually referred to as universal precautions. In the time of HIV, we didn't just say, okay, we're going to wear gloves and be careful, you know, injecting patients who have HIV. You adopt precautions with the idea that anybody could have HIV, and it's the same principle here with COVID-19. Every patient who goes into the emergency room in the QEH needs to be in a setting where if they have COVID-19, they don't pose harm to everybody in that operating room, to everybody in the hospital where that air from, as he explained about the positive pressure, is pushed out. And while I'm not an infectious disease expert, no fellowship or anything like that, I don't know about this global, you know, catastrophe of what happens in a hospital if a COVID-19 patient, and for as far as we know, there could have been COVID-19 patients in QEH already, because asymptomatic patients are like 40%. But what we do know is that anesthesia, what is the thing where they put the patients to sleep when just before the surgeon operates, we do know that that pushes more virus particles into the air. So the operating room is a very critical place when it comes to COVID-19, and the idea that we're going to put on our blinders and pretend that we are not taking COVID-19 patients into the emergency room at the QEH because we said so, it's kind of, you know, I really want to commend him for you know, coming out and advocating for the patients. And I hope that, you know, people don't see past coming on the radio and stuff and just get the job done. It has to be done, and I commend him for trying to advocate for the people of Barbados. He always has, and I'm sure he'll continue to do so.
All right, ma'am. Thanks for calling. Down to brass tacks. Hello.
Hi. Good afternoon, Mr. Ellis. How are you?
I'm well, and you?
Well, I must tip my hat to the fourth estate again today, 2 days consecutive. Now, Mr. Ellis, on Friday, I really had to go. I had to go and do some awesome things to my daughter. But you accused me of running from you, but I wasn't. But during the week, last week, you saw an article in the paper that the government bought a boat for $200,000. You saw that?
And what about it?
It is supposed to trap sargassum seaweed. You saw that too?
Yes, and what's wrong with that?
But you could remember long ago, from the second season of the sargassum seaweed, after that, the first year was a disaster because it rotten on the shoreline and was stench. Then it was too cumbersome to use, moved by hand, and they had to bring in heavy equipment that damaged the shoreline and the turtle eggs and whatnot. I offered to you, Mr. Ellis, that the best way to trap it is in the water, and to get a barge and to get grabblers like what you just grabble up the sugar cane with and use it. And lo and behold, $200,000 later, that is just what they are going to do, Miss Ellis. But as usual, you just try to poo-poo everything that I say. And a barge to work for a couple months, rent a barge and use it would be much more better than looking for $200,000 to buy a boat and then planning to buy you one or two more. So what else you can do with them when the sargassum gone, Mr. Ellis?
Well, you know, I can't answer those questions. We might sell it, get back some money on it.
I wish them luck. If that's all you can say about it, I wish them luck. But remember, I had also said that you could use a net, whether it was like a rare net or something to help back up the seaweed, and just grabble it, raise it up on the bars, it would drain off, and you can do something with it if you want to do something with it. If you wanted to dump it back to sea, like I said, pick a point where it would go long past the rest of the islands and do that. So I'm very glad to see that the idea that you poo-poo is like the stone the builder reject, the one at the corner.
Power to you. All power to you. Okay? Down to brass tacks. Hello? Welcome to the program.
Hello?
Welcome to the program.
Thank you, sir. Now, I'm just calling to be on the side of Dr. Waldron because I know him. I know of his care about patients, because he saved my life in the hospital. And he's not just about doing things for show. He really cares about his patients. And I know if the facilities are not ideal for him to do the best he can, he will speak against it. Because he's not just about doing things anyhow. He's very dedicated, and he really cares about his patients. So if he is against it, I am against it too.
Okay.
I trust Dr. Waldron anytime, anywhere, because I know. And not only me, all the other patients that he was their doctor, everybody had glowing tributes for him.
Yeah, so you're saying that based on the personal experience, you will go with what he says. But we understand that will happen. I mean, once you've been in a doctor's care, it is natural that you will respond in this manner, okay? Down to brass tacks. Hello? You're on the air. Come, you're on the air.
Right reading will come.
Hello?
Hello?
Yes, hi.
Hello, Mr. Ellis?
Hi.
I've never called a program before, but I am and raised at what I've been hearing this afternoon. I think Dr. Waldron should be complimented for his moral and ethical responsibility in highlighting these inadequacies. As an operating room nurse for over 40 years, managed operating rooms, I think his concerns should be given the utmost attention. This does not only involve his or the other doctor's responsibilities to highlight these, but there should be involvement with the surgical committee, the ethical committee, the biomedical committee, the infection control committee, and the quality improvement committee. All staff in the operating room inhaling those exhaust residuals from the anesthesia machine could be so detrimental. I'm surprised that the staff is not coming down with liver diseases.
No, but in all seriousness, we are at the point where the discussion is, I suppose, we haven't had any of these COVID cases yet in operating theater. And the discussion has been about the negative pressure that you create. You actually create a facility that does have the negative pressure. I understand there's some concern about the size of the room and that sort of thing. And even though you've taken care of that aspect of it, the surgeons seem to have a concern about the other element of it. So then, there are two things that they're looking at. They're looking both at the fact that the negative pressure has been sorted out, but then that which is aerosolized is what they're also paying attention to, and how the new facility, is going to address that. So I don't know that we can get to the point of saying, oh, well, you're surprised that people haven't come down with this or that, because we haven't been there yet. It's just, you're at that point where you're trying to get it right as early as possible. You understand?
Yeah, but the operating room negative and positive pressure shouldn't be for all patients, not a specific population, for all patients. All operating rooms should be standardized to meet quality improvement prerequisites.
No.
And I think it is of utmost importance that these measures are looked at very quickly and remedial action taken, because none of us, as you said previously, knows when it's going to be our turn to be a patient there.
Yeah.
That's my contribution.
All right. Thank you very much. We just got time for one more call. Hello. Down to brass tacks. You're on the air. Well, this sounds as though this man came off the air and forgot his phone on, or he's pocket dialing or something like that. No, he's talking to somebody else. All right, so this is where we're coming into the home stretch for today's edition of Down to Brass Tacks. Always provocative, always finding ourselves in a situation where something comes up that, you know, is different. Of all the things that, for me, was significant today was that lady, the hotel worker, who says that she's lost her job and she's got this house rented out, and her two daughters have lost their jobs, and she is one who should really be looking to the National Insurance Scheme to see if they can expedite her particular matter as quickly as possible. She says she doesn't fall into the category where she's able to go and get the government assistance that others are getting. And that's the real story of so many people out there. Thank you all for participating in this edition of the program. And thanks to our technical operator and producer, Michelle Brathwaite. I'm David Ellis. Do have a great afternoon.